room again and somebody closes the door. So if somebody closes the door, everybody in the back, you go tell them,
teacher,
I will speak quieter. For whatever reason, I close my door now, but that means it's really hot here. So, welcome to Languages for Seed. We're going to grow literacy through conversation. So, I want you to envision a little kid, and the first thing they like to give you as a gift in the summertime is a dandelion if they're outside, and it's always going to be a puffy one that you can blow, and it's full of seeds. So, I want you to have that image, and I have the words going off here, because those words are, we're going to talk about the seeds, and those are your words. We can talk about that in context to having self-esteem and self-worth. That's really, really important. It also lays the foundation for literacy. So that's how we're going to frame our conversation today. So a little bit about me. So some of you are very familiar faces, so I apologize. Be reintroduced to who I am. My name is Jessica Beal. I have a little business called Beal for Literacy. I'm in Idaho Falls. I have tutored for a long time. I'm currently paused on tutoring, but I keep my little business open so if people need referrals to places, they can still contact me and I shoot them off to people I trust. I do not actively tutor because I have been doing a lot of stuff, and that's what all this is. So I am certified through the Center for Effective Reading Instruction at the interventionist level. I have a master's from an International Dyslexia Association certified university. I currently work in contact with the State Department for a project called Striving to Meet Achievement and Reading Together. I coach kindergarten through third grade teachers, and I have coached over 100 of them, and it's a really fun job. I miss being in my own classroom, but it's wonderful to work with them. I have a little nonprofit called the Reading League of Idaho, and when I say little, it's really little. One day it might be bigger, but it's very small. I'm a doctoral student in reading science at Mount St. Joseph University, and that is why I'm not actively tutoring. When I was accepted to that program, I had to let something go, and so I had to let go of tutoring. One day it will come back to me. I will graduate in a year and a half, so that's when I will start back up again. And then I have a K-12 Idaho Literacy Certificate, and I'm Orton-Gillingham trained. Orton-Gillingham training, you'll see that in reference usually to dyslexia. And I've taught first through fifth grade. But most importantly, I had a son that struggled to learn to read. His journey first began as a speech problem that turned into a whole ball of wax when it came to reading. So while we're going to talk about DLD, which is a developmental language disorder, which he does not have, he was definitely at risk and potentially could have had it. So that means that you just kind of learn a lot of stuff when you have a kiddo that you're worried about. This is when he was 5. He's now 19. So our goals for today, we're going to understand how oral language supports literacy. We're going to recognize when language development is harder than expected. And then we're going to practice some conversation-based strategies for home. And those are just good practices, and they're kind of fun. So there is a QR code where I plop some resources for you that includes the slides and my contact information. The session I did earlier today, there was lots of great questions, and people even shared some resources. So I will add to that Padlet by the end of the day. If you have questions and stuff, I'll plop them in there. So don't you lose that QR code because you're going to have a growing resource set depending on how the conversation goes in here. Okay? All right. So language is already happening with our children, isn't it? So we have interactions, there's conversation and daily instruction within our rooms or in our homes. And parents already are supporting language growth. Every conversation you have with your children is building that. So I want you to think about all the moments you talk to your children. Kind of enumerate them in your head. Okay, so now I want you to think about the favorite times you have when conversing with your children. And I'm going to have you talk to a person next to you or somebody next to you and kind of share some of the conversations that you have in your home that you really appreciate and love having. So you have to kind of be nice to a neighbor.
I saw a lot of conversations.
I just love her style. Okay, I really hate to break up your conversation because that is what we want to have. We want to have conversation. Does anybody want to share out something that you thought was really like insightful or thoughtful that maybe somebody shared with you? Or you want to share in general? What?
Yes. Oh, I didn't hear your point. So we both found out that our younger kids, we hug a lot when we talk. And it's the thing that goes together.
There you go. Right. So a little affection, right? And that would obviously go into a favorite time, right? Getting to be affectionate with your
child. And then we both had 8-year-old sons who we said we wish would just talk to us.
That is true as well. Anybody else? Go ahead.
I've recently started doing, at the end of the day, one bad thing, two good things that happen during the day, and part of that is to recognize that bad things do happen, but good is always better more than bad, and so I like them reflecting on their day and finding good things that have happened.
Excellent, that's a really good strategy. Thanks for sharing. Anybody else before I click over? Okay. So it all begins under the crook of an arm in the comfort of a loved one's lap. And I've always loved that quote because honestly, that is where it begins. Everything starts for a child in our loved one's arms. And so I think that that's a nice way to frame what we're going to talk about today. It's the beginning, literacy begins in the arm of a loved adult. And learning things begin there, but we're here to talk about literacy. So what do we mean by language? That can be kind of like a broad term. So we're kind of going to try to define what I'm talking about when I say language and how it's different than just saying speech or something, okay? So when I say language, I'm talking about vocabulary knowledge. I'm talking about sentences and grammar that they have heard great sentence structure in their life. And then if they can hear that, then they can reproduce it. When they hear correct grammar, that ups the chances of them being able to speak with good grammar, but ultimately being able to write as well, okay? Explaining ideas and reasoning, retelling events, understanding others, joining in with peers, sharing and connecting. So language actually wraps around everything that we do. So I get a lot of questions about what is the difference between language or speech. So before we go too far, we're going to clarify that. So speech is the production of sounds. It's the actual motor movement of saying the sound. So that's speech. And then language is the ability to understand and share meaning using words, sentences, and ideas effectively. Think about what your life would be like if this was hard for you. You would feel disconnected naturally because it is hard, okay? So learning is language heavy. So which parts of instruction rely on listening, explaining, and talking? Everything. Try to think of something that doesn't have those. Nothing. There's like they all require it, yes. So there's a quote, oral language is the heart of learning. So everything begins first orally. So it's nice to kind of ground ourselves in what is typical milestones, and I like to use just 0 to 5. If you have children that age, I want you to think about those kiddos. If you have children that have outgrown this stage, think about what they were at the time. If you do not have children, think about children that you know, okay? All right, so 0 to 3, we're going to coo and cry and smile. That's their job. When they're 4 to 6 months, make more speech-like babbles, including many sounds. So these sounds with their lips together are actually the easiest ones to say. So that's why they're the first, okay? 7 months to 1 year, imitate different speech sounds in longer groups of sounds. Begin saying words such as bye-bye, mama, dada. 1 to 2 years, they're going to use more words each month. Put 2 words and phrases together. And they can ask questions like, where are you? Right? 2 to 3 has words for almost everything. Isn't that incredible that we go from 0 to 2 to 3 having a word for everything? Uses 2 or 3 words together, it's more easily understood by those who know them. So usually you are sometimes the interpreter for a 2 or 3-year-old child. You know what they're saying, but others outside of your household might be a little confused. 3 to 4 says sentences with 4 or more words, talks about activities and or people, and guess what? They can now be understood by the more general public. 4 to 5, use clear voice, detailed sentences, sticks to a topic, uses appropriate grammar, says most sounds correctly. By the age of 5. That's really incredible. Like, little children are sponges. And I think when you look at the language, the typical language development, you really see that. That children are eating up everything around them and putting it into action. They're actively playing with what's around them, the language component of the sounds, the sound production, and then when they are able to string together those sentences and find meaning. So they're pretty incredible. So, if you were in my earlier session, we talked about this part of this image, but we're here to talk about language, so we're going to move on up. So this is just a visual to kind of talk about what things do we need in order to be able to read. And so we're going to look at the language components that are at the top of this row, the image. So we have to have background knowledge. That means I know something about the thing I'm learning about. So if I take my children to the Grand Canyon, they're going to maybe have some experiences with geology that they wouldn't have had without going there. So those life experiences you give your children builds their background knowledge. And that background knowledge helps them when they are trying to make connections with the world, right? Maybe later on my son is going to read about a geologist in a story. He's going to have something to connect that to. Vocabulary. The vocabulary you expose your children to is the vocabulary that they use. Language structure. That just means the grammar of the structure of your sentences. It really becomes important to read stories to your children because our normal grammar that we use day to day is not really complex because we just need people to understand what we want to do. Our most complex language happens in stories. Isn't that pretty incredible? So that really raises that story time that you have with your children. You expose them to language that they don't hear every day. Verbal reasoning, that's my ability to understand figurative language. So metaphor, inferencing, making connections. And then literacy knowledge is that I've been exposed to nonfiction and to fiction, and I know how to work my way through those sources. Okay, so this all of these strings, you would have handed out at home. So picture yourself just giving those strings out to your kids. You're giving them life experiences with these things. And as we expose them to reading and being able to get the words off the page, they have to make sense of it. And it says increasingly strategic because they have to kind of use what they know that they've been exposed to orally first to put into action as they read something off of a page and make a connection. Does that make sense? How your oral language helps build them to become a skilled reader? That you have to start with having some experiences to build off of, and then you weave it together. So everything first up here, first begins mostly orally. You're going to have conversations about fairy tales and stories. So that's going to be oral, right? Especially they're going to read about it. They're going to have experiences with things that are concrete, like geology. Or if your dad's a mechanic, right? So you're going to have these experiences first, just as a little person going through life. And then we add on to those as they get into reading. Okay. So when language development is harder. So we want all of our children to have an easy time with this, but that's not the case. So some children struggle despite strong language use at home. Just their language may develop more slowly and they need extra support. So we're going to kind of pause in the middle of this and kind of talk about kind of a more extreme disability. It's called developmental language disability and what that looks like. And then we'll talk about good instruction. And actually good instruction that we're going to talk about works for all children, but it's really, really helpful for these kiddos. So developmental language disorder, you'll hear it called DLB. It's a difference in how they process language. That's it. It's a neurological, it's in their brain, it's just a little glitch. just doesn't come together as well. Intelligence is normal. Intelligence is typical. And effort is not the issue. These kids work super hard. We're going to watch some of these kiddos tell you about some of their experiences in a minute. Their language growth is slower and less efficient. And a diagnosis is useful because it gives clarification. So once you kind of know what it is, then you can kind of know how much support they might need. So I'm not going to read this all to you, but I just wanted to pull up that there are a lot, if you Google DLD, developmental language disorder, you're going to find some resources. This one is from, it's cut off, randld.org. So I just wanted to pull some places that I feel like have good places to go for more questions. So we're going to get a taste for what this feels like. So it's hard to like really be empathetic if you've never had an experience that kind of makes you have to work a little bit harder. So I'm going to try to give you an experience, and you guys are actually a bunch of guinea pigs because they've never done this before this way. So we're going to see if it works. So what I want you to do is whoever you were chatting with before, you're going to chat with again, and you are going to read this passage together. Kind of give me like a little thumbs up when you and your little group is done reading, but I want you to read the passage as partners or little groups. Give me a thumbs up, and we'll try the next activity step. Okay?
Out loud. Like one at a time, or both?
Whatever you want to do. I would just read it first. During the interview. I don't really
have to think these decisions about family screenings and the life ordinary people had to consider the safety of their beliefs and the consequences of their actions. As the conflict continued, the supply shortages became common and tensions increased. So the revolution was not only a military struggle but also a personal challenge for families.
Okay, I feel like it started to hush. So are we good? Okay, you've read it once, thank you. So in one sentence, summarize the main idea back to your partner. You can take turns.
There's a comparison of loyalty versus slash royalty.
I had an upper thing because I'm a teacher, so I just knew where it was going. So I was like memorizing.
Okay, how did that feel?
Because I was going to go.
Feel a little bit put on the spot, and you've got to put your thoughts together, reflect yourself, going to talk to a stranger about it, make sure you sound good. Okay, so our next step, that was step two, we have more steps to go. So step three, you cannot use these words in your summary. Now, let me tell you why I'm doing that. People with DLB, they have what's called tip of the tongue. And we actually all have it. Think about a time when you're super stressed and somebody's asking you something and you can't remember and you're like trying to describe around it because you can't recall a word. Well, that's how we feel all of the time. So this activity now, you're going to do the same thing, but you cannot use any of the key words to say it. So go ahead.
People had to choose their alliance.
There you go. You're pretty good. Okay, so did you feel how it went from like kind of hard to like real hard? And it felt like a little like convoluted? Well, that's how it feels for them. Like that was a little practice in empathy about what it's like to be a child who's trying to sort through this stuff. And actually, DLD never goes away, so adults are still dealing with how do I say this, what's the right word, and how do I express myself. So how did the two tests feel differently? We kind of talked about it. Does anyone have anything they want to share about that little trial? Go ahead.
It's like pregnancy brain.
Yes. 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 That's actually a really lovely metaphor. Okay. Thank you. Oh, good question. Should we go back to that flyer?
1 in 14.
1 in 14.
1 in 14 people have a hidden condition called DLD.
It's me.
Okay. So now that you have a little practice in empathy, I always love when I can find a resource with a teenager sharing their experience, because I feel like they're not an adult, so they don't have like an adult perspective. They can still talk about kind of what it was like growing up. So I'm going to share it's like 5 minutes. I'm not going to show you the whole thing. I'm going to clip it to 5 minutes. But just kind of listen. The other thing is DLD is a spectrum disorder, so you're going to see the different spectrums, the different layers that this can come in, okay? And they all are English, so they're going to have an English accent. And I have to set it up, so you're going to have to forgive me for a minute.
Well, people can. Students with DLD also have something called word finding difficulties. This is where they know the word in their head, but they have difficulties accessing it. This has real ramifications on conversations, as they often can't get the word out, which can be really frustrating, and can be really stressful when they are picked on in class to answer a question and they can't find the word. Word finding is like they can't even think of a word and they don't know how to say it, and they think they might say it a wrong term. So, for example, if a person is trying to think of the word cat, they're like, oh, I don't know what this is. And then another person say, what do you do with it? What does it look like? And then they will describe it like it has four legs, it's ginger, it could be black or anything. And they're like, you're thinking of cat? And I'm like, cat! And they'll get the word.
You try to think of a word in your head, you find it, but you can't find the word, what you actually mean, and then you try to explain it, and it just comes out all mumble jumble.
How does it feel when you've got an idea and you can't quite get it out in the way that you want it to?
It's frustrating, because it's like the case of you that it is, it's like, it, you know it's there, but you've got to kind of search for it. But I have learned strategies to help me with it, and, you know, sometimes it does hard, but I never give up.
Alongside DLD, students can also have difficulties with their speech. This is the sounds we use when we talk. This means that often the communication partner doesn't understand what the person is saying, and the person with the speech difficulties can get really frustrated and annoyed that they can't get their message across.
I helped Joe. Someone was like, didn't understand Joe. I would like help them, like help him what he says, because he finds it really, like, you find it difficult, don't you?
Yeah.
You find it difficult, and they find it really difficult as well, and you find it frustrating.
It can be really difficult for students with DLD to form and maintain friendships. This can be for a number of reasons. Students with DLD find it really hard to keep up the pace of conversation, and also understand the language used in conversation. For example, idiomatic phrases, humour, and jokes.
Is it difficult to make friends when you've got DLD?
Sometimes it is, because sometimes they don't understand. It gets very difficult because you not being able to understand or talk to people, it does get quite lonely.
Students with DLD may not be able to access the curriculum due to the barrier in understanding and using language, and as a result they may start to fall behind in class as they aren't able to understand the complex vocabulary and grammar that's being used.
What can your tutors and people that are teaching you do to help you?
I would definitely say to actually slow down, because that always helps. Because it's like the case of when everyone's speaking about something fast, it's like it's really tricky to understand.
Students with DLD have difficulties learning, retaining, and using vocabulary. They need explicit teaching, often from speech and language therapists or other professionals, to work out what the word means and how to use it in a sentence. My speech therapy helps me with my my vocabulary of what it means. Like right now I'm doing a course right now and I'm learning the new vocabulary of what they mean and how do I use these words in sentences.
Well, what helps is any vocabularies that you've never heard before comes in good examples and explanations, as in you show which what it is, like its color, red, blue, or green, as in noun, verb, or adjection. Shows you what it means and probably give a sentence example.
I ultimately want the students that I work with to leave Morehouse School and College as confident and happy young adults with increased independence, to have formed friendships, and to have strategies to support their communication moving forward.
Do you think that every...
Okay. So I thought that was a good thing to watch after that little activity we did together. Kind of helped frame why we did that activity, right? So do you have any thoughts after the activity and then listening to the students kind of share their experiences?
So I have a 16-year-old, and he's got some other things that we're working on, but this is making sense with him. And he'll tell me, he's great to tell me what's happening, and he's like, if he would slow down, I could understand better. And he's like, how can you help me? Whoops. In conversation, he said, when I'm talking to people, they talk so fast, and I know what they're saying, and then I can't respond. Later, I know what I would say. And so, do you have any tips?
So, we're going to go through some conversation strategies in just a little bit, but so maybe I'll go through those, and then if you're like, that didn't quite hit it, do you have anything else? Would that work?
Yeah.
Did you hear the boy talk about red, yellow, green? Mm-hmm. So, they use a color symbol system for him to be able to know what the verbs and the adjectives and the nouns are. And you can tell that he was really good at it because that's how he was describing them to you. Like, isn't that cool? That the strategy that they're using, he understands what a noun is, he understands what a verb is, he understands what an adjective is, he understands the different things, and he's learning to use them, and he felt confident enough explaining it to a camera. Like, that's actually pretty cool. So some of those strategies using color coding and actions and giving them a system. Honestly, a system is super important to work through. So this is from DLD and Me, again, another resource online. But I thought that this was really handy. This is meant to give to maybe a babysitter, or maybe you have a tutor, or maybe grandmas and grandpas don't really understand. And so you check mark which symptoms are hard for you. And so I thought that was kind of a nice little handy tool, but then it also shows you some of the things that they struggle with. Remembering everything you said, making sense of long sentences, understanding the whole story or message, keeping my attention focused when people are talking, learning new vocabulary, understanding what you mean if I have to read between the lines. They have no inferencing skill, it's super hard. Reading and spelling words, remember the word I want to say and when I need it, follow a group conversation. This is what makes that social experience so hard. Because everybody else is sharing and you want to jump in, but you just can't keep up. Pronouncing words, explaining a big idea, telling stories, answering questions, and feeling frustrated when communication is hard. So you guys felt a little bit of frustration, so just imagine if that was your permanent situation. Go ahead.
So a lot of these symptoms, I mean, I don't know how, I guess, you would diagnose it, because a lot of them overlap with other, like, yeah. A lot of this is like ADHD stuff.
Yep, so ADHD and DLD, dyslexia, sometimes they have comorbidities. That just means they co-occur. So it really just takes having a good group of people you're working with to kind of, like, know which direction you need to go. But the nice thing is these strategies help all of those things. And then autism, we sometimes see children with autism kind of have some of these things, but it's not directly correlated. It's a separate disorder. All right, so how can you support someone? Give them time. In fact, I feel like that's just the number one thing, and that's actually in a homeschooling environment. You have the freedom to give them so much time. Inside a classroom, there's so many other things going on. It's really hard to pause and give children the time that they need. And you guys are built to give them time. Break down instructions into small chunks. So that's actually good for everybody, but it's incredibly important for these students. Reduce distractions in the environment. So when we were all sharing and talking, that was like a kind of like a classroom-like experience. That would have been really hard for somebody that does have DLD or some of these difficulties to be able to function within, because there's just a cacophony of sound on top of me trying to get my thoughts. Using visuals, we're going to talk about visuals a little bit. Not a ton, but visuals are super helpful, both getting actions and having a sticker chart or something to follow. Use short, simple sentences. Don't overwhelm them if you know that that's hard for them. And those strategies actually work if you're talking about ADHD, so that's the same set of strategies you would give to somebody with ADHD as well. So this was, I thought, interesting. DLD affects the ability to process and learn from language, whether the modality is reading or listening. Wouldn't you think that they would have an okay time just hearing? Because they don't have to get the words off the page? They have struggles in both modalities, both just with listening and with being able to read it. So I think that's a nice little litmus test. Like, is my child able to do a lot if they're just listening and it's only in reading? They won't have DLD. DLD will have that listening component that's hard for them. All right, so these are some ideas that help all learners, but they're incredibly helpful to the ones we've been talking about. So talking grows thinking. Whoever does the talking does the thinking, okay? So if you are always doing the talking, that interferes with somebody else's learning. So you have to find ways to get them to communicate and share, because whoever does the talking does the learning. You want back and forth interaction. And we do this all the time with babies. At least I did. Maybe it's because I was lonely. But I would say, and now I'm going to cook dinner, and I'm getting the butter from the fridge. And the baby would just sit there, and they wouldn't say anything, but they knew what I was doing the whole day. I was just narrating. And that was washing them in language. That's actually a really good thing, washing them in language from the very beginning, like we talked about. But then as they get older, we can have a conversation with what I'm making for dinner. And can you get me the butter from the fridge? Thank you for getting the butter from the fridge. Can you get the forks out for dinner? Yes, you can. And just have that back and forth interaction. And you do that all day long. But this emphasizes the importance of it. Correction is not the goal. We don't want to necessarily correct them, but we're going to model better sentence structure for them. Because we're going to go through this where a child always answers with one word or with two words, and we're going to model back to them how to use a complete sentence to give the answer, and over time we'll see that they get better. Be patient as they collect their thoughts. It's so hard to not rush, but sometimes they just need time to collect their thoughts before they share. And then technology use impacts language use. So we've kind of been as a society, experimenting on children and giving them the devices very early on. As somebody who has coached 100 teachers over the last 5 years, we have children that are addicted to technology devices, who don't know how to use a pencil or a pen, who don't know how to have peer conversations because they always want to do this. That has an impact on their language. If you're not talking to children and you're just giving them a device every time that they are, loud, then they're going to have a device a lot, and then that decreases the amount of back and forth exchanges that we need.
But that doesn't necessarily cause DLD.
No.
DLD is born with it. And
yeah. Exactly. Good point. It just doesn't help it. So we're going to do a strategy called Strive for Five. This is a conversational goal and a structure to help care providers. So the goal is to have five back and forth. So I have the parent and the child and the little bubbles going back and forth. So we're going to practice. You ready? All right. So many children will just answer in one word. Parents should always model with complete correct sentences and natural language inflection. So we're going to hear that good grammar. You can slowly build longer responses from the child. So over time, you should see them getting more comfortable and understand. We aren't trying to get better answers. We're not, their answers are never wrong. We're just trying to get them to aim for more language over time. They get more comfortable with it. So the adult adds description, always uses full sentences, and you have to stay on the topic. Let's also model that, because an ADH brain, you're easily going to get watched. So it's the same kind of thing. You're going to keep them on topic. You never lecture, moralize, or over-explain. This is very simple. You keep them as fast and speedy, easy to do. So you can start off with pictures. So here's just a picture, and the parent might say something like, "What do you see in this picture?" And the little child might say, "Dog." And the parent will say back, "That's right, there are dogs." So I'm saying, "Yep, you're right," and I am going to say it back to a complete sentence. "How many dogs do you see?" So now I'm going to extend it and hope that they have something else to add. They might say, "How many dogs do I see?" "Two." And then you respond back, because we're trying to get them comfortable with hearing full sentences and getting them more comfortable, and hopefully those one-word answers will turn into two, three, and then four later on. So the parent might say, "There are two dogs. One has a stick." All right. So we're going to do one together. I'm going to get us started, and you guys can help me. So, wow, this is a pretty picture. What do you like about it? Let's say the kiddo says, "Mountain." The response might be, "I see those tall mountains, too. What else do you see?" What do you think they might say?
"Tree."
Tree. Okay. So what would so if this little girl says tree, then what is the parent gonna say?
"That's right. I see mountains and trees in this picture."
And you can even add a hiker that's walking up a narrow trail, so you can even expand. But excellent. Yeah, we're gonna reaffirm what they've said, and we're gonna add on and get them hearing the complete sentence. So you guys are gonna do one with your partner. So get cozy with whoever that was. So I'm gonna start you off. So decide who is gonna be your child and who's gonna be the parent. And your first one is the parent's gonna say, "What are these children doing?"
"What are these children doing?"
I do a little add-on. There are half all of the boys.
Yeah, it's like a rainbow
in our business. Yeah, they have to have to lose. Red to lose. Yeah, yeah. Red. 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 I chose this picture on purpose because I thought there were so many interesting ways that one could go.
He bird vomits.
All right, does anyone have one they want to share? Where did yours go? What are these children doing? What did you guys say they were doing?
Dancing.
Dancing. Okay, and then what was maybe the parents' response?
Or exercising.
Or exercising, yes. But hopefully you got a feel for it. It's just a nice rule of thumb to have in your back pocket. You don't have to, like, do that all the time, but it's just nice to know if you have a kiddo that needs to extend their language and you notice, oh my goodness, they're always answering in one-word responses or two-word responses. This is a really thing just to have, a nice thing to have in your back pocket. Yep.
Just a side note, too, again with the 16-year-old, he's everything mechanics, and he's good at explaining when he, you know, can. And so sometimes we'll use a picture. He'll say, "I was looking at this car," and I'm like, "Oh, yeah, tell me about it." Well, he can't. Like, he's, you know, whatever. Then he'll pull up a picture and say, "See this?" And he'll start telling me all about it.
So you kind of heard from those kiddos, the kids in the video, like that the visuals really seem to help. That so if you notice that there's something struggling, that's actually what an SLP would do, is give them some visuals to work with. You can do the same thing with a story. So I'm jumping off the diving board today. Jabari told his dad, "Really?" said his dad. So the question would be, "Where is Jabari?" "Swimming." "It looks like he's going swimming at the pool. What does he want to do?" "Diving board." Do you see how they're not able to say just dive? So then he would re-say, "He is excited to jump off the diving board at the pool. He wants to dive." So then he just exposed them to different ways to use dive and diving that they obviously didn't know. So you can just slip those quick little things in there just in everyday conversations or when you're having those story times. Okay, so this is a fun one. And we heard that guy talk about colors and visuals. So when you see yellow, it's going to be a character. So there's my character image. Purple is going to be setting. And I like to have little kids come up with actions. I don't like to actually give them to them. But like setting, character, whatever you want to do for character. Problem. Oh no. Whatever you want to do. Action. And ending. So as you're reading stories, you can do like, oh, this is the character. What's my action for character? What is this setting? And then when you do the retell, all of a sudden they know what to do because they have the action and the color and the story, and they can retell it where otherwise it would have been really hard for them. So I'm not going to go through that whole thing with you, but we could walk through Cinderella because I feel like we all could know Cinderella. Okay, so who's the character? Who's the main character?
Cinderella.
And the setting would be?
Castle
or her home, right? Goes back and forth. The problem?
She lost her shoe.
Yes. And what is the action? What happens to solve the problem?
Prince tries to bring her shoe.
And in the end, what happens?
Happily ever after.
There you go.
She lost her shoe.
You've retold the story. And little kids who struggle with this, you add the actions and you make it a game, they no longer have as much of a difficult time.
So I don't quite understand what that would look like. Like you would say, like I would say, this is Cinderella, and I would make up a sign for Cinderella.
So you would be writing a story, and whenever you get to a character, you can make it general. You could be the main character, or you could be any character. They could give you a sign for whatever that is. So, and it becomes like a little game. Oh, it's a character. We give the character a sign. It's this new setting. I give the new setting a sign. Sometimes stories, there's not just one problem, because if you think about Cinderella, there's actually many problems. So you might have to repeat this a little bit, right? But it just gamifies it a little bit, and then they're able to retell it better. It's just a lot of scaffold, and what's nice with little kids is you make everything feel like a game, and they're in it. Okay, so language fits into the day. So like we were talking about, talking to your baby about everything, your routines are language rich. I am putting this on top. I am putting this on the bottom. Like I'm putting the books away on the shelf. All that stuff is good for them. Meals, walks, chores, they all matter. Just wrap language around them as you're doing it. Barrier games are super fun. We were going to do one, but I think I'm going to be out of time. So I'm going to model it really fast. And offer opportunities for children to listen, to follow directions, expand ideas, ask for clarification, and use social language. So a barrier game is where you have a child and a parent, you have an older child, that could work too, and there's a divider between you so you can't see what the other one is doing, and the adult provides directions, and the child's game is to follow it. So they have to listen in order to do it, and it's actually really fun. So you're going to keep it simple though, start where you think your entry point is, and then slowly build. So there's lots of fun activities, like there's obviously blocks are a good one, but coloring pages, and that's what we were going to do. And you don't actually even need to have a divider, you can just have a clipboard, you can be coloring, they can be coloring, and you can say, I'm going to paint my bird red on the top line. And then go through until the whole thing is colored and see if you match. And then, yeah, we match. And you give them a sticker or whatever. But it's really, really good for them to listen and respond and to see if they can follow directions. And kids like it. Doing this with Mr. Potato Head is also fun. You each have a Mr. Potato Head and you see if you can get them to match. As they get better at this, then you can swap it and the kid can give you the directions. When that kid can give you directions, man, your kid's cruising. You're doing the right things. Okay, so those types of things are good for everybody. They're actually just awesome for everybody, but they are very important for kids with attention deficit problems and for DLD. When language problems just persist over time and your progress remains really slow, and we see some of those symptoms, you need to find a good SLP. Speech language pathologists are amazing. All the things that I talked to you about today, all the strategies, that's what SLPs, that's their bread and butter. They work to get children to talk, and they know how to do it by tricking them into it with play. So a good SLP is your first line of defense if you feel like something's wrong. If you've tried all these things and it's not working, find a good SLP. The clinic here is actually really good at ISU. They have a good reputation, so even just calling that clinic and seeing if they can help you would be good. So I hope you understand my language is the seed. It does begin the very beginning stages for literacy. Conversation is the nourishment. Oral language sets the foundation for later literacy skills. Look for ways to boost meaningful conversation, and your SLPs are super useful. If you're running into a brick wall, go find a good SLP. And there's a list of references, and then I have all of those resources for you on the Padlet, including, like, if you liked the character activity, there's a printout of those. So that's it. Did I make it in time?